Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning. We have a lot to talk about and a lot of things going on in the world, so we won't waste a lot of time. I do like questions, so feel free to ask them, and I'll have a brief time for Q&A when we're done. We're going to concentrate, obviously, on the United States and what's going to happen next. There's between tax law and tariffs and yesterday's pronouncement against specific action against China, there will be some things that are happening. One of the things just to remind you of, because this is a highly charged political environment, is that our firm does not take sides. We only look at what the economic impact will be. We try to avoid words like good and bad, and try to avoid mentioning anybody's name in particular. We just want to talk about the economic policy and the possible impact. Okay, the first thing is, and I was asked about this already, how do we do with our accuracy? And so I brought this along to show you, and I think that you'll be pleased by the accuracy that my firm brings. The last, 2 years ago, when you heard what was going on from us, we presented a forecast, so I thought you'd like to see how it played out. And we do this all the time, and the duration is how long the forecast was in place. So you can see at the end of 2017 how well the forecast did that I gave you, or we gave you 2 years ago, 30 months ago, 25 months ago, etc. So the methodology works out. And I just want you to know that so that you can have some comfort in the forecast that we're going to share going forward. Let's start with this. Understand the United States is the world's largest economy. There's nothing really close. We're a lot bigger than China when it comes to the economy. And that doesn't mean we're without problems, but it does mean we have a lot of advantages. We're going to talk about the problems and we're going to talk about advantages. Let's begin with the problem. We'll begin on the negative side. This is a map, obviously, of the United States, but the colors are significant here. The red means population drain. So if you live in one of the states that's red, like Louisiana, people are leaving Louisiana. This is a net migration graph, so that means no immigration. And if you're in Pennsylvania, people are leaving. You can see the deep red. People are leaving California in droves. If you're in a blue state, people are coming in. If you're in a deep blue state, lots of folks are coming in. So if you're in the southeast, for instance, there's lots more business, there's lots more people, there's lots more economic potential. The reason I'm showing you this is because if you're in a red state, it's harder to get labor. It's hard enough to get labor, but it's even harder to get labor because there aren't as many people there, and the quality and the labor force that's behind begins to diminish. Businesses begin to leave as other businesses fail. So it's obviously a very significant thing for us to consider where you live. Now, I'm going to add in immigration. And I want you to please just catch the difference when I add in immigration, and you can see the map changes. We're not talking about illegal immigration, we're talking about legal H-1B visas. So with more people coming in, we actually can get some economic growth, more than what we would have in some states otherwise. The United States does not replace itself population-wise. We went for too long without having enough children, and our population is not self-sustaining in terms of fertility rate among women at this point. So immigration is important. Why am I bringing it up? Two reasons. One is that if you find that our policy in Washington is to constrict immigration, remember it can be bad for your state depending on where you are, and it can be bad for the economy overall. Number two, I want to show you that even immigrants don't want to go to West Virginia. That's the other thing that you take away from that. No thanks, I'll stay in the Sudan, I don't want to go to West Virginia. It's that kind of thing. Okay, if you're from West Virginia, I apologize. Anybody here from West Virginia? Oh, there are a number of you. Wow. You don't have to go back, it is a free country. Okay, let's go on. This is the industrial production forecast, and you relate to industrial production, and more importantly, hardwood prices relate to industrial production. And so that blue line on the right-hand side is where we're at now. We're climbing. The economy's doing well. That length of rise is 1 month longer than normal, which begins to make me nervous. The shaded line is the forecast. We think we're about ready to see the economy slow down. I'm going to show you why before we're done, but it's about to slow down in our opinion. And then in 2019, on industrial production, goes slightly negative, then it picks up speed again on the other side. It's not going to be a real recession because GDP is not going negative. It's just going to see the economy slow. And that's all you should plan on too, is housing to slow, the demand for your products to slow. We're going to find that as the economy slows, you're going to feel that. Don't think it's the end of the world. Don't think it's 2008 or 9. It's not. It's just going to be a softening. So plan your budgets accordingly. And you may want to automate, update, modernize, change your website, whatever you have to do over the next year, because you'll have more time to do it and you can get ready for what's on the other side. This is the time to look at your business and say, what have I been putting off? What do I need to do to move forward and be better, stronger, faster as I get to the 2020s, which will be a lot of fun. Here's the GDP forecast. The diamonds are the brown diamonds are the old forecast. The blue diamonds the new forecast. Just so you can see, there's hardly any change. There's just a slowing, and then things pick up speed again. All right, let's go through your industry and take a look. When we begin, we have to begin with a math function. It's a rate of change. It's just simple math. It's the pressure curve, if you're old enough. It's your monthly data. Now, figure this as your data. Not, it can be anything. It can be the country, interest rates, whatever. But picture it as your data. And as you picture it as your data, it's hard to forecast that line that you see, but there is a way to do it. The first step is to smooth it out to a three-month moving total, which is 3 months of data moving together, and then you just keep moving it every month. You do a year-over-year comparison, and you get your first rate of change, which is a quarterly growth rate. That's your first metric. The second thing to do is to, third thing to do, excuse me, is to compute your 12-month moving total. And you can see that while the first column doesn't really give you a good picture of where you are and where you're going, that one there shows you you've been growing. And you've been growing month after month, and you can feel very good about your business. You should feel very good about your business. But when you compute it and make it into a rate of change, you find that your rate of growth has bled off significantly. You were growing at a 26.7% year-over-year clip. Now it's down to a little over 12%. And that should bother you, obviously. How long is this going to go on? Now, I suspect you're not there. I suspect your rate of change is going up. But this is where you're going. And as this is where you're going, just understand that it means there's some more strain on cash. But like I said, you have more time to do things. It's not going to go negative on you, not likely to go negative, just a slower rate of rise. Then you're going to pick up speed and you'll be real busy. Okay, here's U.S. Sawmills and Wood Preservation Production Index. Now, the top two trend lines are the rates of change. The bottom lines, the brown one, is a seasonal trend, and the blue one is the overall index and the direction it's going. Now, when you look on top, the thing to watch for is whether the brown is above the blue or below. If it's above, that means that there's upside business cycle pressure and then things are picking up speed. And if it's below, it means the rate of speed is going to bleed off. The zero means zero growth. So we're still in positive growth, but the quarterly number is smaller than the 12-month number, and that means that things are slowing down on you. Some of you are just cresting in B and getting ready to move into phase C. You may not feel it because that bottom blue line is going up at a nice pace, but the rate of change is already signaling there's a bleeding off that will occur in the industry. You've been real busy, I suspect, because we're at the highest level of production in 10 years, and the seasonal trend is very normal, so you're not feeling anything unusual in your business, I suspect. But you see that rate of change is giving you a mathematical look into the future. You're likely to be slowing down. So if you compute this on your own, you'll get a picture for your future. When I look at hardwood lumber producer price index, the rates of change say prices will be going up. So the question is, how long will prices be going up? And the answer is not much longer. Because as the economy cools, we should see producer price index cool. Then I'll show you that. It would be normal for that bottom brown line, which is the only relevant line on this graph, to continue to rise through 2018, but at a much slower pace in the second half of this year. And then in 19, first half, feel some downward pressure. How do I know? Why do I think that? Well, as I relate hardwood lumber producer prices to U.S. total industrial production, the overall economy, I see that when the blue line goes down, it puts downward pressure on the producer price index. So I have my forecast shown for you there. That's the one I showed you before. And so while the brown line is picking up speed now, the forecast says it's not likely to last. And when the blue line does go down, it tends to push prices down. And I believe that's your future. You're going to get some relief from pricing. All right, what's going on in the world that worries you? Let me ask you in the interest of time, does North Korea worry you? No feedback is taken as a no. Okay, we'll move on. We'll look at the bottom three. We'll talk about NAFTA. We'll just talk real quickly about China. China is not going to overtake the United States by 2025, 2030, 2035, as those estimates have been given by different people. It's just not going to happen. Their problems are too big. Will it ever happen? I doubt it. But I'm only going to live 21 more years. So my caring is only 21 more years. I don't really care beyond that. You know, whatever happens after that happens. I actually suggested a countdown cake for my family. I thought that would be fun. Instead of putting 61, 62, 63 candles, we'll go the other way. Put 21, 20, 19, 18, and kind of count down. Thought it'd be fun. All right, real quickly, China's problems have increased since we saw you last. They still have a population problem. They still have a pollution problem. They have a banking problem. They have a debt problem. Those are four very significant problems. But most recently, and very disturbing to me, is Parliament has decided to lift presidential term limits. So the current president can be in power for as long as he wants. With the elections there were kind of a sham anyway, but it's the first time since Mao that we've had a leader in China with this power. And it's rather disturbing. And he has said, as he began his second term, which has now become a reign, they're moving away from free enterprise in their economy and back to state-owned enterprises. Now, as they go back to state-owned enterprises, that means two very important things. Those state-owned enterprises are the ones that dump. Number two, it's the inefficient part of their economy. Doesn't pay their loans, they're monolithic, they're corrupt. There's all kinds of reasons to see economic troubles in China as they go back to state-owned enterprises. They do it for political control, but as an economist, it's easy to see that this is going to become problematic. So eventually China will implode or they'll go to war, which is a standard cure. I don't think we're going to see anything in the next decade coming out of China other than a continued erosion. There are statistics to back that up, but they're boring. The global leading indicators are pointing down. So that softness in the United States is not just here, it's around the world. And that means trouble for us as a nation because those are our trading partners. And we need trading partners. So as the economy of the world slows, it has a negative impact on the United States. That's one of my concerns. The other concern is the federal government. You'll like this one, I think. The purple line, if you can see it from, this is a lot like church, by the way. The front pews are empty and the back of the church is filled in. What you see here is the purple line, which is cash into the federal government. The green line is mandatory payments. That's healthcare, that's Social Security, that's pensions, it's everything the government has to pay. So their has to pay is much larger than cash in. The brown line is not mandatory, that's subjective budget. That's NASA, that's Department of the Interior, that's funding for different things. So you add the brown and the green together, and that's called a budget shortfall, which leads to a deficit, which leads to problems for the next generation and the generation after that. I'm not sure there are, well, maybe. Are there millennials in the room under 35 years of age? Anybody here under 35? Really? I wouldn't have guessed. Okay. Your beard makes you look older, for one thing, sir. Nice cover. I like it. What this means for you millennials is that you're fundamentally screwed. We'll just leave it at that and kind of go on. All right. That's the background. Let's talk about the tax law. And here we go. The blue line is a reduction in top marginal rate for taxes. The brown line is GDP, the economy. So you can see in the 1960s, which some of you will remember, as the rate went down, the economy blossomed for a year, and then it came back down. And then later on, under Ronald Reagan in the 80s, lowered the rate again, and the economy went up not as far, but a little longer. And then the next time we lowered rates, the economy went down. That blows economic theory out of the water. And then the next time we raised rates, the economy went up. Now economic theory makes no sense. And then we lowered rates again a little bit, and the economy plummeted. So there's no correlation. There's no rational thinking to say just because we change tax rates, the economy is going to do well. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I like the changes in many, many ways. I like what it does for small business. I like what it does for pass-throughs. I like what it does to reduce and simplify. I'm a fan of all of that. And I hope that I'm wrong and this really spurs the economy. It's just that as an economist, I have to divorce myself from what I like and look at it analytically. And analytically, there's no easy answer to the question. But statistically, it's not going to make a difference. If it does, it won't be for long. It'll pull things in from the future. It won't change much of anything. Whoops, excuse me. When we look at the last time corporations were asked to pay less in America, the reality is that the green line, which is GDP, didn't do anything spectacular. Just kind of bounced along like it always did. So our one test case, which is only one, says that we shouldn't expect too much. Now, you won't be able to read this from where you are. This is your punishment for sitting in the back. Let me help you out with it. Tax reform lowered the statutory rate from 35% to 21% for corporations, for C-Corps. Some of you probably see, which is why I brought this along. The other number, 18.4%, that was the effective rate after deductions, exemptions, and credits. Now, small businesses didn't get the benefit of those. So again, a lot of us are going to see our rate go from 35 to 21. That's a good thing. But we're small business. A small business does a lot of hiring, but it does not do a lot of CapEx. It does not do a lot to change the economy in immediate ways. So how much bang for the buck there is hard to guess. Part of the rationale for the tax change was that it would provide businesses with a lot of cash. Businesses are already awash in cash. We had all kinds of cash. We just weren't spending it. Why we would feel more incentive to spend it because we have more cash doesn't make sense. But the rapid depreciation, the one-year write-off does. My curiosity there, though, is wrapped around how many people would buy two machines instead of one just because you can write it off. If you're looking at a new machine and it's going to cost you $500,000, do you really sit around in the evening and go, well, since we can write them both off, let's spend $1 million instead of $500,000? If you are going to do that, by the way, I want to talk to you about some consulting services, all right, because I think you're ready. I think there's probably a mistake in logic here. And it's nice that you can write it off, but it's not going to force you or induce you, I don't think, to buy more than what you need and more than what you're willing to spend. And therefore, how much are we just pulling in from the future will remain to be seen. One of the things that's also mentioned is that the government's going to see a big influx of cash because of this, and that Apple is a test case for this. They're going to pay $32 billion into the economy, and I answer big deal to that because every business that has to pay a tax as they bring cash in has 8 years to do it. So if they have 8 years and they decide to do a straight line payment, that means that Apple has to cough up $4.5 billion a year. When you're running an $18 trillion economy and your government spend is over $4 trillion a year, that's a pretty small number. It's a very small number. And Apple's free cash flow is over $500 billion a year. It's nothing to them. It doesn't even blip the needle on the federal basis. And yet the press made it into this, whoa, it's working. It's nothing as we go into the future. You can multiply that by a large number of companies. You can say it'll bring in $100 billion a year. When $100 billion a year is a tenth of 1% of the economy, it's nothing. So I know $100 billion is a lot of money if you stack it up, but in size of the U.S. economy, it's not that important. All right, let's go on. So I'm not really thinking there's a lot of advancement here. The Federal Reserve Board did a study, and they don't think there's going to be a lot of bang here for the buck. Just 15% of companies said they would spend more than 10% on CapEx, more above what they're already planning. And most of those were small businesses. So again, the Fed, the math, the economics, policy, the failure of economic theory, all that suggests we may be right at ITR. That we're not going to see a lot of benefit. All right, let's switch over to good things. Let's leave the bad things behind. All kinds of good things going on. We'll get to the ones that are pertinent to you. Let me just start off for the millennials again. I told you you're fundamentally screwed. You're also the most blessed nation on the earth because you're going to inherit a nation that is energy independent. We actually produce 96% of the energy we consume. We do not need foreign oil. We just buy from Canada. We buy from Mexico. Mexico in particular is a source of foreign aid. We buy from Saudi Arabia as the third largest source, but we refine that and sell the products. We don't use it in this country, so we don't need the Middle East. As a matter of fact, we just sold about a month ago 700,000 barrels of oil to the Middle East. Who would have thought that? Did you ever think you'd live long enough to see us sell oil to the United Arab Emirates? How cool is that? You know, it kind of makes you want to get to a day when you can look at them like they did to us and go, no, you can't have it. How do you like that? Just like in 1974. Who's from Texas? Nobody from Texas? Oh, one fellow. We have more people from West Virginia than Texas? That's never happens. Well, your state, by the way, is where the oil came from, because you have light sweet crude and they have sour, so they wanted your oil. And you're happy to sell it to them because you made a lot of money. All right, good things going on. We're going to go through this list. I want to start with exports. The green line is the rate of growth in exports. You can see that green line begin to tip. And if it continues to tip, that's important because exports are 11.8% of GDP. Here's something you might want to bore people with, because that's what I do professionally. The United States is the second largest exporting nation in the world. You listen to people out there and you kind of get the idea we're a loser nation that can't sell anything anywhere in the world. 66.1% of the things that are counted in exports are things that are made, finished goods. And a lot of that is made and finished here, or else it wouldn't be counted as our export. We export so many things, it's absolutely amazing. So if we get into a trade war, what does that mean? Well, let's explore yesterday's announcement that we may put $60 billion worth of tariffs on China. Okay. They said they're going to retaliate and put 25% tariff on some things, 15% tariffs on other things. Okay. So I'm listening to the news this morning before I come down, and some industry experts, unnamed industry experts, I always love that when people aren't named. That just means some college kid who happened to email in said that these tariffs could cost us $332 billion over a decade. And I went, over a decade? For one thing, nothing lasts a decade, but if you stretch it out to a decade in order to come to a big number, you're really stretching the point. And if it's true, I did the math on this, if it's true, that comes to $33.2 billion a year. $33.2 billion a year is 2/100ths of our GDP. So what's the takeaway from that? Big deal. And then I went a little further and I looked at China versus the United States. Who gets hurt worst in a trade war was where I was going for. We buy from them almost four times more than they buy from us. So if we put tariffs that hurt their exports to the United States and they put tariffs on that hurt our exports to them, who gets hurt worse? They do. And their economy is much more wrapped around selling exports than ours is. Ours is 11.8% of GDP. Theirs is much larger. And who's their largest buying customer? Well, it's Europe and the United States. We're essentially tied. So one of their biggest customers, maybe the biggest customer, is saying, keep your junk. Who gets hurt in that trade war? They do. But you're going to find the media saying all kinds of other things. I just wanted you to know the math behind it. If the president puts these tariffs on, it's not the end of the world. It's not the beginning of this national trade war, global trade war. But what it does always have is the law of unintended consequences. Never an exception to that rule. That's why I used the word always, and I meant it literally. What happens is you will find some people lose their jobs because they are exporters and they're no longer exporting nearly as much. So some people lose their jobs. And when you put tariffs on all those goods coming in, whether they're coming in from China or other places, you're going to be paying more. And as you pay more for the raw materials coming in, we call that inflation. And when inflation begins to build up, what does the Federal Reserve Board have to do? Raise interest rates. And as they raise interest rate, it makes it more expensive to borrow, which means you may feel some pain, but eventually it impacts, and it's the word eventually you have to pay attention to, it eventually impacts the housing industry, which is going to impact you down the road. So understand, please understand, the law of unintended consequences is real, and there's nothing you can do about it. If you're going to play that game, which may or may not be a good idea, we're not going to give it a good or a bad, just want you to know the economic consequence. And for you millennials, you've never seen a period of inflation. You're about to enter into a new experience. Us older folks, we have. We remember the 70s. Well, we remember pieces of the 70s because it was the 70s. All right, don't go there. What a time though, huh? The damage was permanent, but the memories were worth it. So remember the importance of exports, please, and that this will slow exports, which has a slowdown effect on the economy, whether it's worth it or not, and the inflationary pressures that usually ensue. Manufacturing is strong in this country. I run into people all the time to think we don't manufacture in this country, and they're just told that. You can't blame them for thinking that. But the green line is manufacturing. We're almost at a record high. We had record high manufacturing before the Great Recession, and most Americans still think that manufacturing has gone offshore. Certainly not true. Most Americans think that we don't have any manufacturing jobs in this country. Manufacturing job openings in this country on a 12-month moving average basis are at a record high, 411,000. So like you, manufacturing cannot get enough labor. And when I run into people who say there are no jobs, I know the statistics prove otherwise. And they say, well, that's because manufacturing doesn't pay. Wages in manufacturing are at a record high. More openings, more pay, not enough labor. So when I hear somebody in Washington or in the media say we need to create manufacturing jobs, I think you got it wrong. We need to create manufacturing labor. Where are we going to get it? We're going to get it from younger people in this country who are taught to not go into manufacturing. So we need a campaign to show them that manufacturing, distribution, working in this industry, all kinds of things are good and noble and good paying jobs. And that to go to college to spend $200,000 on a music degree is not going to help a lot. What's the difference between a park bench and a musician, by the way? Do you know? The difference is a park bench can support a family, okay? That's the big difference between the two. All right, we're a manufacturing giant. We've got all kinds of things going right. And we make all kinds of things in this country. It absolutely blows my mind when I think about it, what's going on. Now, will we have a trade war because of steel? Probably not, because the president backed off and lifted the tariffs on a whole lot of nations. He left it on some pretty interesting nations. I don't know why he did that, but whatever his reasons are, Canada and Europe, which includes Turkey, is exempt. Russia and Japan are not exempt, which I don't know why we're having troubles with Japan. Taiwan, India, and China, they're going to pay the tariff. But we'll have other places to buy steel without the tariff. It may be still Chinese steel coming in from Canada. And do we have any Canadian friends with us? No Canadian? In the back. Are you Canadian or were you just swatting a fly? Okay. You, in Canada, you sell us more steel every year than you make. Pretty good trick, don't you think? That means it's coming from somewhere, which could be coming from Japan, could be coming from Turkey, no idea where, but it could also be coming from China. We just don't know. All right, this is not as big a problem as most people think. It's fixing a problem in steel that didn't really exist, but in aluminum it certainly did. And trying to bring production of aluminum back to the United States is not a bad thing. It's just not a national security item. That was done as a trick of law, just to make sure the WTO can't reverse this. Imports are the blue line, in case you can't see it from where you're at, and the brown line is consumption. So imports are certainly outpacing consumption. Tends to move with consumption, overshoots on the high and overshoots on the way down. And right now it's overshooting on the way up because consumption of steel is up. And we're facing pressure from importers, to be sure. The reality is, though, is that steel production in this country is moving up, 5.3% above year-ago levels. It's higher than it was in the 1980s, on pace with the first half of the 1990s, below where it was in the early 2000s, certainly well below the 1970s. So as an industry, that has felt some pain. But the way this is presented is if it's dropping off a cliff, and that we need, and I've heard this so many times, I get so angry, we need to create jobs in the steel industry. Where are they going to get the labor? From the old people who have retired? They don't know the new technologies. Those people worked in blast furnaces, not the electric arc furnaces that we use in this country today. So we're going to take 65-year-olds out of retirement and teach them new things? Do you think that's possible? I don't think so. They're physically not up to the work. And we can entice new people in. But just so you have a picture of reality, we have more people working in the steel industry than we have had since 1992. We have 169,200 people working in the steel industry, more than we've had in 15 years, and excuse me, longer than that, 25 years, and yet we're told that we're losing jobs. That's nonsensical. By the way, every statistic I've given you so far comes from the U.S. government. I'm using federal statistics to show you the reality. So it's not as bad as people think. And again, the tariffs are more punitive than reality, but is brought to us under the guise of creating jobs. That can't be filled. Okay, and this is just a fun graph. Economics, we like to have fun too. It doesn't look like fun, but it is, because the brown line are robot sales and units, and the blue line is job openings. So when you hear somebody say robots are taking all of our jobs, I just thought you'd like to see the reality. They are not. When you run into somebody that says that they are, just tell them WALL-E was a movie, not reality. That's why it was animated. The thing to remember is that the companies that I run into that are heavy into robotics add people. They add people of increased skills. They pay people more. It's not a dumbing down of people and a replacing of people. It's transitioning people to more complex jobs. And they tend to hire more human beings when they have more robots, because their business grows. And as their business grows, because they're globally competitive, it's good for the country. All right, that was just fun. Here's another fun one. Two in a row. Can you stand it? This is a list of regulations and heavy-handed regulations on different countries. It's called Ease of Doing Business from the World Bank. And what you see here is that the United States, and I love rolling back regulations. I think rolling back regulations is one of the best things possible. It just appeals to me to no end. The United States has become the sixth lightest touch in terms of regulations in the world, according to the World Bank, not the U.S. government this time. New Zealand is the lightest touch, but that is only to show that it does not take a lot of regulations to take care of sheep. That's all that means. You look at other major industrialized countries, and the United States is in really good shape. So we're a strong manufacturing nation. We have a light touch on regulation. We have all the energy we're going to need. We have 300 years worth of energy in the ground at current consumption levels. We're a strong nation. We're a nation that businesses and countries want to come to. All right, let's look at the leading indicators now. And as we look at the leading indicators, we start with the ITR leading indicator. That's our own. If you can see that brown line, and I'll segregate it out to make it a leading indicator, it looks like it's cresting. That's beginning to show that slowdown in the economy that I was telling you about. This is a highly correlated leading indicator, and I think it's beginning to show us that. When I look at the ITR leading indicator and its relationship to the Lumber Producer Price Index, the fact that our leading indicator, now in blue, looks like it's beginning to curve, suggests some building downside pressure on prices. It's a nice historical relationship, and I would suggest to you that that's the case. When I look at industry capacity utilization rate, which is just a leading indicator, it's obviously highly correlated. It also is beginning to curl over, suggesting we're on track with our forecast for the second half of this year. And when I look at the lumber producer price index in relation to that same capacity utilization index, that curling over has the same impact on prices. The purchasing managers index is moving down. Clear, unequivocal signal that manufacturing in this country is going to be slowing down, and with it, most likely the economy. The decline in the producer price index, which is now the orange line, shows that the stock market was already facing downside business cycle pressures. When the stock market slows on a rate of change basis, that's often, but not always, an indication of a slower economy ahead. Now, please understand that I'm not going to forecast the stock market for you. I can't. I cannot time the stock market, and I would not even try, because that's just a way to be wrong. But the indicators are, this is one and this is another, the price earnings ratio in a trend graph. When that blue line goes above the red line, it's always trouble. There's enough pressure on the stock market, and with a slowing economy, one would expect a correction, that this has been bid up too high and that you're going to face a correction. So if you're going to retire soon, go really conservative would be my advice to you, if you haven't already. If you're young, shrug it off, because you're going to have more than a decade to make up for it. So, you know, just depends on your age. If it's you're Gen X, and I haven't ignored you, it's just that you're not that important. Well, you won't be in power for long. Politically, it's the boomers that are in charge now. It's basically going to skip the Gen Xers and go right to the millennials because there are just so many of them. There are 6 million more millennials than there are baby boomers. Just a little statistic you might enjoy, that by 2035, we'll have more people over 65 in this country than we will have children. That's a negative, obviously, as we go into the future. So if you're young, I would suggest you do your part for your country. Just have as many children as you possibly can. And I'm talking to the ladies, not to the men, okay? You don't count. It's how many children the ladies in our society have. Okay. Oh, and if daughters count for more than sons. So if you have daughters, that's even better. So try to arrange for that too. All right. If you figured out how to, let me know. When I look at the Wilshire total market cap, that blue line is beginning to come down. That also says your prices are likely to soften in the near term. When I look at non-defense capital goods, new orders without aircraft, the blue line on top's rising, but the brown line on top beginning to come down. And that's beginning to come down from that height. It is signaling a likely slowdown in the U.S. economy. Now, if I'm wrong about taxes, this is where it shows up. That's why I have in green there. What I'd like you to do is track this for the next few months, and I'm going to make that possible for you. I'm going to show you how to do that. But if I'm wrong about the future, this is the place where it shows up. So track this one, please. And if I'm right, this is signaling at this point the economy is likely to slow. I think it's going to slow because this green leading indicator says it's going to slow because oil prices, because the PMI, other leading indicators, including the global ones, say that this is likely to be slowing down the second half of the year. Now, on the good side, retail sales are doing gangbusters. We're spending like there's no tomorrow, which is good, except for the fact that we've taken our savings and really reduced them. Lowest we've seen in a long time, the actual dollars that we've saved. That's a bad thing because if there's trouble that's coming, we have no reserves, which means the only choice we have is to cut back on spending. And as we look into the future, we think that people, consumers in this country, are going to cut back on spending. Now understand this is not, but it is representative of 70% of the economy. So if this slows, it is significant. And I think it's going to slow because our ITR lead indicator for retail sales, that green line, is bending lower. And it seems to be suggesting that retail sales are going to slow. So if retail sales slow, B2B activity slows, and exports slow, we call that a slowing economy. We're 3 for 3 at that point. Doesn't really matter at that point how much spending the government does. And infrastructure cannot happen this year. It's not going to happen this year. Even if it's passed, you don't begin to spend money until at least a year into the future. And we're not going to see the government, you know, spend $1 trillion this year on anything. So the three segments of the economy that matter seem to be set to slow down. Another reason to expect this to slow down is that savings rate. The green line is reality. It's already happened in the past. And it is saying that retail sales will slow. And as retail sales slow, that's a demand pull for you, obviously, because ultimately the consumer will drive your business. And it's something to then take note of. When we look at housing construction, the thing to notice here is that the blue line is above the brown line. The rate of growth on an annual basis is great at 9.2%, but the last quarter was just 6.7%. It's a normal seasonal decline in that bottom brown line, but it was steeper than the last 3 years. And overall, we are forecasting that that bottom blue line, which is the 12-month moving total of housing starts, single unit, single family, is going to peak around September 2018, then move down to about the middle of 19. Slowly, ease down. Not a crisis, not a drop, nothing that's going to be debilitating, just going to ease down. Some of your states aren't going to feel much of this. And others are going to feel all of this. Depends on that first map that I showed you with the population movement. And people coming in will continue to see some houses built. People leaving your state, you're not going to see a lot of build going on for sure. because there's not that much trading up that's going to be going on. So it depends on your state, but this says as a nation, housing is going to slow down. And housing slowing down does have an impact on your world. The blue line now is housing, and sawmills and wood preservation production is the brown line. And so when that blue line comes down, it tends to mean a slowdown in your industry. And I think that blue line is getting set tomorrow, day after, to begin to move down. And as it does, it certainly is on target with that downward pressure in your industry that I started with. And it also means there's downward pressure coming on lumber prices. That's what this graph is about. It's a bit messy, but when the blue line comes down, it's downward pressure on prices. Now, depending on what region you're from, I thought you'd like to see single family housing construction, and that it is going up on a dollar basis in three out of four parts of the country. It's phase B in two out of four, and phase B is the best part of the business cycle. It's still ramping up. Northeast is ramping up because it was so terrible for over a year. Phase C is slower growth, except for the South, where it's late phase C and the dollar amount's actually going down. Expect that to reverse as we go through, you know, the middle of 2019, and expect all of these to be in the phase C and no real significant phase D, which is below year ago levels. When we look at multifamily construction, we do have phase D, which means that multifamily in the South and the Midwest is plummeting. The amount of starts is extremely negative in the South, and we find that we're going to continue to see some decline in the South and in the Midwest. The Northeast is climbing out of a very deep hole, and the West is still doing well. It's accelerating up at the moment. And as you look at this then, it says that there are mixed opportunities in housing in the future, and certainly mixed opportunities in multifamily now and in the future. Each state will be different. I just didn't think it would make sense to go through 50 states in a short presentation. In case you can't read it from where you are, the top says, I can't adult today. The bottom one says, please don't make me adult. This is for the millennials. It's your time. You don't have a choice anymore. You have to become the adults. You're getting older, and you have to take responsibility. All we ask is that you don't kill us baby boomers off to take care of the healthcare problems. That's all that we ask. And that's your only solution, by the way, unless you want to be buried by the healthcare costs, because there are 40 million of us, my generation, that are drawing down on Medicare and Social Security and prescription drugs. And that number is going to jump to 70 million by 2030. So you millennials, and you Gen Xers for a day and a half, but mostly the millennials, are going to feel this gigantic pressure come upon you. And you're going to wish we were dead. Do not let a millennial visit you in the nursing home, because they're likely to step on your air hose, okay? Just don't let that happen. All right? And when they ask you how you're feeling, don't say, well, it's really discouraging to them. Say slipping, it makes them happy. Here's a couple cool things about millennials that you might like. We've been told for quite a while now, almost a decade, that millennials are going to live downtown. That's where they're going to live. They're beginning to leave downtown and go into suburbia because they're starting to have children. And as they have one or two kids, they're beginning to drift out. And when they drift into suburbia, they're obviously moving into homes. And a lot of them are buying new homes. And they're becoming just like us, which scares them when they think about it. We're also told they're not going to buy cars. I know you're not in the automobile industry, but the automobile industry is an important part of the economy. We're told they're going to use Uber and Lyft and Zip cars and all the rest of that stuff. They are the largest leasing group of automobiles in the country, and they mostly lease SUVs and not the cute little ones. They are so much like us, it's really encouraging. They sit, they save, they budget, they're doing things right. And they want a work-life balance and all the rest of that. We don't have time to get into that, but that's fine. They'll figure it out. They're technologically advanced. I want to finish up with millennials on this. Look at your website, and if you're happy with it, your website's wrong. It's that simple, unless you're a millennial. If you want to start selling to millennials because they're the next buying public, you have to have a website that's designed for them. And if it's designed for them, you're not going to like it a lot. And the thing is, millennials will mostly decide to buy from you or do business with you if they like your website. Then they might call, then they might let a salesman visit, then they might go to you, but you have to impress them to no end on your website. Because if you have an old website or you have one that doesn't provide much information, doesn't have any white papers, doesn't have any blogs, doesn't have any specs, they're going to walk away from you. And eventually your business is going to begin to do this because they are the next buying public. So just kind of keep that in mind, okay? Your website is key. And you have to change it. You really don't have a choice. Deming once said, you know, change is not mandatory because survival is not required. If you want to see your business thrive in the 2020s, where the Gen X, Gen Y are really coming into power, it's going to be in your website and how you reach them digitally. Are you on Facebook? Are you on Twitter? Besides following the president, do you use Twitter? Do you use LinkedIn? Do you use all those social media to reach people around you? You have to at this point, or else you're out of phase. All right, let's go on. I thought you'd like to see that prices are beginning to moderate on a PPI basis, and that means that the Fed, who just raised interest rates this week, will be raising interest rates in the future, but only by 25 basis points each time. There's not going to be this great urge to get ahead of inflation, because as inflation is easing, they'll pat themselves on the back and say they've done a good job. It's not going to last. Because of labor shortages, wages are going up rather quickly. And as wages are going up, it just slowed in the most recent quarter, but that's just one quarter. It doesn't mean a thing. We're going to find as wages go up and those inflationary pressures build up, interest rates keep going up. And I can prove it to you. When we look at the past, and let me get on this side, we look at Paul Volcker on the left, the fellow who looks lost, that's Alan Greenspan. Then Dr. Bernanke, very happy with himself, and then Janet Yellen, who was a good Fed chair. The red line is interest rates in their tenure. So as you can see, there's a highly correlated mean to what interest rates are going to do based upon the height of the Fed chair. This also means that millennials haven't seen anything but interest rate decline through time in their entire life. And as Jerry Ford once said, the pendulum will swing full circle. I mean, interest rates have to go up. So I'm going to throw in Mr. Powell, the new Fed chair, and I think you're going to agree with me, interest rates, that line that's starting to go up are going to continue to go up, because here's Mr. Powell. Mr. Powell, show up. Don't be shy. Where did you go? Oh, there he is. Of course interest rates have to go up. Look at him. So if interest rates are going to go up, what do you have to do? What should you do? If there's inflation in the future and interest rates are going to be going up, what must you do? Borrow money, because you're going to be paying it back with cheaper dollars. You're going to have a really low interest rate now. You're going to get a short-term loan. You're going to get pay it back with inflated dollars. You're going to invest it in your business. You're going to invest it in real estate. You're going to put it in things that'll protect you from inflation or make you more efficient. Then you pay it back with essentially monopoly money, and you're going to have yourself a good time because of Mr. Powell's height. Okay, that's the big reason for it. All right, let's, all of a sudden I'm having troubles. Would you go to the next one for me, Amanda? Thank you. For our Canadian friend, I just want you to know that you're going to follow the United States. That's all that Canada is going to face. The leading indicators are down. The industrial production trends are beginning to turn. Everything going on in Canada suggests you're just on track with the United States. In case you, just as an FYI, our neighbor to the south is feeling all kinds of pain in the global market because of the United States, not because of them. And the bond market is saying it's a dangerous place to be. So if you're thinking of investing in Mexico financially on your, just for your own purposes, understand the bond market is saying stay away. 10-year bond yields in Mexico are at 7.54% today. Anything above 7 is an oh my gosh. Brazil's at 9.5 something, which is a warning, Will Robinson. Danger, danger, danger. Stay out of there. And by way of comparison, Greece is about 4.5%. So they're saying Mexico is more dangerous than Greece. Go figure. Mexico has a purpose, at least. Okay. So what are your questions? Oh, I got to make you an offer. I told you I'd help you keep track. So let's go on. Amanda, am I doing that now? Yes, I am. Interesting. Okay. Here's the offer. I would like to offer you a 3-month subscription to our ITR leading indicator for free. And that's how you're going to keep track of all the leading indicators I showed you. And I'd like you to specifically keep track of non-defense capital goods new orders, because that's the one that I said, if I'm wrong, that's where it's going to show up. So you'll be able to track me. You'll be able to see if we're wrong and not adjust for a soft 19, but adjust for a more robust 19. One of these people, that's my sales team, one of them's going to call you and ask you if you want to do a tutorial. Take the tutorial because you'll be up to speed on using this the first time you get it as opposed to the third time you get it. They'll show you the pages, they'll tell you how to read it and all the rest of that. It's not hard, but it just accelerates the process. So please do that. Now my ask is that as you send that email in to updates@itreconomics.com, I'd like you to put in the subject line HMA, of course, then put Alan is cool. Two reasons for that. Economists are not cool. So it makes me feel better. Number two, most of you know, it's my twin brother and I are the principals of ITR Economics, and we're fiercely competitive, and we're in a contest right now to see who's the coolest. So I'd like your help. Just say Alan is cool. If you want to have some fun with me, put Brian is cool, parentheses, just kidding. You know, that'd be even better. So that would help me out. I want to help you out with tracking those leading indicators. And while you're on the phone with our folks, take the phone call on the tutorial is all that I ask. Okay, what do you have for questions for me before we're done? Before we wrap up. What did I miss? What's on your mind? Thoughts, concerns, sir? If you wanted to, not that you had to, but if you were looking for a time to get out, 2017 and early 2018 was the time to get out, because that's when multiples would be good and your earnings would be good, et cetera.
Where do you want this?
Oh, it's too late now.
Is that good?
The mere fact, about 10 years from now. And I would suggest you sell it to somebody you don't like, because that'll be emotionally rewarding. And if you give it to a family member, expect some frosty Thanksgivings, okay, for a while.
Is it a laser?
But it'll be fun for you, because as they go into the Great Depression of the 2030s, to be able to say, what did you do with my business? So it's a perfectly good business. It'll be fun. What else is on your mind? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. 70s again? Because the demand is going to slow because of China. The rates of change on housing and construction in general has already gone negative, so that demand pull is going to ease. And in general, a slower global economy makes the demand pull ease, so those log prices can go down, which means that you should be able to feel some easing. Remember, that's a rate of change. And I said an easing, and I said the rate of change would be going down, which means that if prices stabilize, that's a real win. If they just barely creep up, that's a win. I did not say prices will be moving down. I said the rate of change would be moving down. I actually showed you the three-month moving average, and I said it would be normal for that to rise until November 2018. Yes, sir.
What's the forecast for China's growth rate in terms of their economy over the next few years? We're about 6-7% now?
Yeah, what's the growth rate projected for China over the next few years? And the gentleman answered his own question, which is always nice. About 6-7%, and that's what most people are projecting. What you need to understand, though, is that's a meaningless number because they make it up. Their numbers are totally unreliable. As a matter of fact, the chief information officer for the communist government, his name is We Lie. So just kind of remember that, and you'll be fine. You'll be fine. All right, one more if you got. Yes. In China, not Mexico. Yes. Yeah, there's a population. Okay. Good way to end. There are 125 million more males than females in China, age 25 and under. Where's that going to end is in a lot of grumpy males, is the answer to your question. At least it's societal stress, unhappiness, people, men who are willing to move anywhere, even North Korea, men who are populating Africa, because science has proven, and you can Google this, but use somebody else's computer, two men never produce a child. So it's a self-perpetuating problem. So either China brings in 125 million women, in which case the world would notice, Where'd they all go? Or those men have to go somewhere. And that just means China's going to be inhabiting more and more of Africa and gaining those natural resources, because that's a problem that just doesn't quit for two generations. It's a real problem that they face. And Japan's is worse. Russia's is worse. Germany without immigration is worse. The United Kingdom without immigration is an inverted pyramid. It's a V. Canadians without immigration, it's a V. The United States without immigration, it's a bit of an hourglass. We've got to go through the pain of the narrowing before it begins to widen out. But that's down the road, so there is some pain. So it's a global problem, along with mounting debt around the world and major industrialized nations. It's the most in Japan, etc. We're going to find that all of that leads to a crushing financial system beginning around 2030. All going to fall down on us. You and I will be retired, as we talked about, so we won't care. And later on, our big worry is going to be, is our food pureed? I mean, we've got a whole nother sense of issues coming up. But for the millennials, you're going to live through that. And you're going to make a lot of money if you do it right. I am out of time. I'll stand around for a few minutes if you want. But the reality is, for millennials, this is a wealth-creating opportunity for you. Nothing to be feared, something that you will gain from if you do it right. I'll answer your question privately after, because I'm out of time and I like to be on time. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks. Have a good day.